Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 2nd of Cheshvan. Today we're going to talk about the issues of mourning people who are not observant, who have left Jewish society. It's an interesting tshuva by Rav Chaim David HaLevi in Shut Aseh Lecha Rav, Volume 5, Siman Lamed, number 30. So the question comes, it's a letter from the 2nd of Cheshvan, because Rav Chaim David HaLevi doesn't actually date his responses. He always starts off, or often starts off, by saying, I got your letter of such and such date, and I am responding to it now. Here he says, Mahel HaShivcha, so it seems like it was somewhat very close to the 2nd of Cheshvan, but we don't have a year either, which is kind of relevant because he's going to talk about the fact that he doesn't get a lot of questions like this, whereas today, I would think they're much more common. So I think it's probably from a while back. So the question was, the man writes that he had turned to Rav Chaim David HaLevi about 3 years earlier, about how to act towards his father, who is a Mumar L'chol HaTorah. So Mumar L'chol Torah, and this is actually very relevant to this tshuva, because Rav Chaim David HaLevi will treat this person as a Mumar. Mumar is somebody who has rejected all of Torah, who doesn't observe anything, who doesn't keep anything. So in our time, we usually think that there are two kinds of people like that. There are people who actively reject everything. They know what's going on. They understand Torah. They've learned Torah. And they don't keep anything. And they've rejected. And that's a mumar. And that's the classical version of a mumar. In our times today, there are also people who we think or understand not to have had the proper education. And therefore, we think of them more as being tinokot shenishbu, as being people who unfortunately didn't learn the right things about Judaism, therefore can't be blamed for, or fully blamed at least, for their lack of observance. So it's not clear to me in this tshuva if, when he refers to the father as a mumar, he means it in the sense that the father really was once an Orthodox observant Jew, was raised in a fully observant home, and then abandoned observance, or he means that the father doesn't keep anything, and that nonetheless, Rav Chaim David HaLevi treats this person as a mumar. It's unclear in the tshuva, so I can't tell you. If I had to guess, my guess would be the second. Rav Chaim David HaLevi is saying that for these purposes, the fact that somebody is non-observant, it doesn't matter whether or not, we don't care whether or not it was because they never learned anything, that we treat them in this way, but I could be wrong about that. It's not clear in the tshuva. The man writing the letter says, so 3 years earlier, he turned to Rav Chaim David HaLevi, and he is noheg mamash kefi shehorei tani. And I do what you tell me. All the way he's told me how to treat the father, that's what I do. Now this father is very ill. He needs an operation, and the doctor says that there's a danger in the operation, and it's quite plausible that the person will pass away from the operation. So the man writing the letter to Rav Chaim David HaLevi wants to know what to do if the father passes away. What's he supposed to do in terms of being part of the funeral, in terms of tearing kriya, tearing his clothing upon hearing the news of one's passing, in terms of mourning, in terms of saying Kaddish and things like that. So Rav Chaim David HaLevi comes to answer. He notes that, and I think he means here to praise the man asking the question, that you don't usually get some questions. He says, that people who are Mumar L'chol HaTorah Kula, including Yom Kippur, and their children, all of a sudden come back to observance and have returned to observance, you don't find so much of that. Again, it seems to me that he's talking about a time before there was a significant movement of Baalei Tshuva, but that he doesn't mean it's not so common when the father has just abandoned observance in that first generation. I'm not sure about any of this, but that's what it seems to me. In any case, whoever he's talking about a mumar, somebody who is not observant in a way that halachically we see them as being problematic. So that's the kind of person we're talking about as a mumar, somebody who doesn't keep anything, doesn't keep Yom Kippur, doesn't keep anything. So Rav Chaim David HaLevi points out that there's a Braita in Smachot, which was one of the small masechtot that have a sort of in-between status. They're not as authoritative as Mishnayot, but they sometimes say things that don't have any contradictory sources to them, and therefore are accepted the halacha. So the Mishnah, so a Braita in Smachot, in the second chapter, says, Kol ha-poresh midarchei tzibur, anybody who separates himself from the ways of the community, ain't mit askin imo bechol dovar. We don't get involved with them in any way. So it's not clear from the words itself what that means, but the Rambam and many other Rishonim understood that what it means is kol ha-poreshim midarchei tzibur, that we mean by those who leave the ways of the community. The Rambam says in Hilchos Evel, in the Laws of Mourning 1:10, hey va'anashim sheparku ol ha-mitzvot. They are the people who have overthrown, who have gotten rid of the burden the yoke of mitzvot. They don't consider themselves obligated. They don't keep mitzvot, and they're not. They don't include themselves in the Jewish people in keeping any mitzvos or in honoring the holidays or in going to shul or into the study halls of the Beit Midrash. They are kivnei chorin le'atzman. They are like completely free for themselves. And that seems to address issues of practice. So again, today we often say that people are tinokot shenishbu. They don't know what they're doing. They didn't have the education to understand what's going on, and therefore they're not in this category at all. As I said, Rav Chaim Dov Leib will not bring that up, issue up at all, perhaps because the case he was talking about was somebody who could not qualify as a Tinok Shenishba, or perhaps because he didn't recognize the category for these purposes. Back to the Rambam, because the Rambam then says, V'chein ha'apikorsin v'hamumarin. And so too, to apikorsin mumar, whatever the specific definitions are faith categories. They're people who have rejected faith issues, and they also have, by doing that, separated themselves from the Jewish people. So you have the three categories. You have the practical category, people who don't keep anything, don't join the Jewish people in any observances, and then already you might want to talk about it. If somebody joins a certain cultural practice of Jewish people and makes clear that he himself thinks of himself as Jewish, even though he doesn't keep anything, does that count for anything? Does it not? We don't get that in here. So here we're about whoever the people are who have completely rejected everything and therefore out of everything, the Rambam says, "Ein mitablim aleihem," we don't mourn them. So Rav Chaim Dov Leib points out that the definition of poresh b'darchei tzibur, of leaving the ways of the community, and the words is that they don't keep any mitzvot, right? They got that definition. And also, the Rambam lets us know that his understanding of smachot was that when it said ein mitaskin imahem, we don't get involved with them, we don't busy ourselves with them, he thought that meant in terms of being involved in their mourning, right? That we don't mourn them, that's what we mean by mitaskin. There was another opinion. The Beis Yosef in the tour had pointed out that the Nemuke Yosef, who's a commentary on the Rif, in Moed Katan, had understood it differently. He said that Porshim Midarchei Tzibur was a much more stringent category. She'ein rotzin lehitzta'er b'tz'aram shel tzibur. They don't want to join the community when they're in trouble, and to be part of the burden that falls on the community, especially, he singles out in terms of taxes. He gives other examples as well, but taxes is like the most surprising example. And then he says, "Ein mitaskini mahem lehitbatel mimelachtan." When he says we don't get involved with them, it means to stop our work for them. So, meaning, as we'll see in a second, if there's a funeral for somebody who is like this, who didn't pay taxes with the Jewish community because they didn't bother to care about the needs, the community, the Jewish community, then if there's a funeral for them, we don't feel the need to go. We don't stop what we're doing to go to their funeral the same way, sort of, that they didn't get involved with us. So he mentions that he wouldn't have brought this, he wouldn't have mentioned this to Mukhe Yosef, because most Rishonim don't argue, don't fasken that way. Most Rishonim assume similar to the Rambam. But he includes it to tell us the seriousness of leaving the Jewish community. That leaving the Jewish community, that according to Nemuke Yosef, even just not paying particular taxes and levies that are assessed on the Jewish community at a time when governments used to assess communities as a whole, so not willing to be part of that financially, that's just money. You might have thought, okay, so he's a bad guy, so he's not paying his money, so what? Meaning, so for example, nobody thinks that if somebody unfortunately is an embezzler, and they've embezzled in their lives, I don't think anybody would say, oh, so you don't go to their funeral. But here, it's not the money, it's that Nemuke Yosef is saying that by virtue of their refusal to pay this money, they demonstrate something unfortunate about their attitude towards the community, and that our reaction as a community is that we don't then do certain communal, reciprocate with certain communal, ordinarily obligations, certain communal services that we provide them, we don't provide them. And then Rabbi Yosef thinks that qualifies as being a poresh midarchei hatzibur, that is somebody who has left the ways of the community. And although he says that we don't paskin that way, it happens to be that the Ramah does paskin that way in terms of going to their funeral. The Ramah rules that we do mourn such people. The relatives would have to sit shiva, and all the customs of mourning that come into play, we would do. But he does say, other people, aval ein sh'ar, the Rama says, aval ein sh'ar b'nei ha'ir tzechim levatel mimelachtam b'shvil la'asok imo. The other members of the community, of the city, they don't have to give up work time in order to be involved in trying to make sure that he has a kavadika burial, and make sure there are people at the funeral and stuff like that. So he throws in, by the way, if we know the people who evade taxes, today, taxes that Jews need to pay, like in Eretz Yisrael where he's living, then we might not go to their funeral. We might say, you know, we don't need to go to their funeral. I'm busy. I don't need to go. So the obligation to go to people's funerals is not absolute, and it has to be people who are involved with the community. And if they refuse to be involved with the community, then that's a big problem, and especially just going to their funeral. So he doesn't say this, but I just thought of it, and I try, whatever. I like the idea of speaking up when something comes, thought pops into my head and trying to say it, unless it's completely inappropriate. But I have heard recently about cases where people like refuse to pay their shul memberships for various reasons. So everybody has a reason, everybody has a good reason, bad reason, but there are people who just don't pay shul membership, and they might not pay shul membership for years at a time. And it just strikes me as I'm reading this tshuva again, as I'm presenting it to you, that we're kind of already saying the people who refuse to pay their communal taxes, we might not be required, according to Moti Yosef, as is accepted by the Ramah, they might be considered Porshim Midachi Tzibor enough that we don't have to go to their funeral. On the other hand, when it comes to burying such people, so now his fundamental category, Porshim Midachi Tzibor, is the Rambam's category, which is somebody who has either left observance completely or somebody who has a problem in his, of being a min, right, of being somebody who has lost faith and doesn't have the right belief systems to be part of the Jewish community. So the Brighton's Machot says, "Ein mitaskinim b'chol davar," and the Rambam wrote, "Ein mitablim aleihem." So mitaskinim b'chol davar means we don't do anything with them, we don't get involved with them at all. But the Rambam wrote, we don't mourn them. So the Rambam implies, as Chaim Halevi is going to accept and agree, that we do bury such people. We have to arrange for the burial, to be sure to make sure they get burial, because how could you imagine, he says, that we would leave a Jewish person, however evil they are, without burial, when after all there is a specific mitzvah in the Torah to make sure to bury people. And that mitzvah in the Torah of Ki Kavor Tikvarenu comes in a context where you'd easily think not. It's in the context of somebody who's been put to death by a court for a sin they committed, which means that they've really worked hard to commit that sin, because remember, the courts only put people to death with witnesses and testimony and warning, and there's all these barriers to putting people to death. So somebody's put to death, and then after they put to death, you're supposed to hang them up on a tree, up in public for a day. But then that night you have to bury them. That's what the Torah says. The Torah says, Ki kavor tikvarenu. The Torah says to hang the body on a tree. And then says, Ki kavor tikvarenu. And the Rashba has a tshuva as a response to which the Rashba wrote, even though we say we not, the with the Brayta and Smachot said we don't get involved with them, it didn't mean in terms of burial and shrouds and things like that. It meant that we don't tear kriya and we don't eulogize them, but we bury them, and we then the Rashba says omdim alav bishura, that we actually, you know, after the burial, we stand in a shura, and the mourners come by and we comfort them the first time. So that you do, and it all we would make sure to have happen for them as well. So the Rav Chaim David says, it all seems clear to him. It seems very clear. And that's the majority opinion, the large majority opinion in Poskim, that we bury such people. We make sure that they get a proper burial. And therefore, he writes, and therefore I didn't see a need to contradict or to refute the ideas of those who disagree. But I can't hold back on one thing, because there was somebody apparently in the time who wrote that about Rishaim, about these kinds of evildoers, that the person wrote, V'lama yiyeh chiyuv al Yisrael lekovram. Why should the Jews have the obligation or the burden of burying them? So I didn't see the original thing, because just a quote here, he doesn't give you a source, but I think what the person writing meant was, you know, you have all these people who refuse to observe the Torah and refuse to be part of the Jewish people in those ways, and then they die, and there's a communal cost to that. We have to pay for it. We have to handle it. We have to give them room in Eretz Yisrael. I think some of those things. This person was saying, why is it our obligation to give anything of our things for these people who weren't involved with us during their lifetimes? So if Chaim David Levy says, it's got to be that this person is so bothered by their leaving the path of Hashem, as we should be bothered by that. We should be upset about that. But Rav Chaim David says, "But aval ein eila divrei tam." But these are not the proper way to think about these things. This is the way we handle these things. He says, "Shalom lechol davar anem yachasim alehem kisrael gamur." These are all Jews. They're bad Jews. They're Jews who have done things that lead us to react to them in ways that are somewhat punitive. But they're Jews. So why would it be that when it comes to the mitzvah of kavura, which is a biblical mitzvah, we would all of a sudden say, oh, you're not Jewish for that purpose. So he says, and there's a long discussion you can have about this, but he's confident that's the way it's supposed to go. So if we're talking about burial, that means a funeral as well, with the relatives there, with other people coming for the relatives and to honor the relatives, as it were, or to help them in their time of distress. And that's why the Rashi wrote, Omdim alav bishvura, you're going to have people there to stand in two rows to give some comfort to them. And Mikani says, so since we can see that the burial includes the funeral, then this son, who's worried about what he should do, clearly he's allowed to be part of the funeral, right? You might have worried he's not allowed to be part of the funeral because this person doesn't be having a funeral because they're supposed to be embarrassed and treated badly by virtue of their lack of observance. So the answer is no, he's allowed to have a funeral and he can go to the funeral. But then he says, but since I don't know you well enough to know if you're a Kohen, so that's remarkable. Meaning, he's clearly getting letters from people and he doesn't really know who's getting letters from. He doesn't know very much about them. He answers the letter they get. So 3 years ago, this man wrote him a letter and said, I have a father who's not observant. What do I do about it? He gave him advice. And now the man's writing him again, trying to find out what to do if the father passes away. And Rechayim Dov Halevi doesn't know this person in terms of even if he's a Kohen. So since and doesn't know how to pick up the phone and talk to him, but so he writes in the letter. So if you're a Kohen, then you're not allowed to get involved. Ordinarily, when the father of a Kohen passes away, so then the Kohen is not only allowed, he might be required, that's a machloket, but he might be required to render himself tameh, to get ritually impure as part of, I don't think it is a machlokah, I think everybody agrees that he's required to get himself ritually impure as part of burying the relative, as part of burying the father. But in this case, since the kavura is of a person who has not been observant at all, so he says, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, Kohen Shapir Shu Avotav Medarkei Tzibur Einon Mitameh. In Shinayin Gimel Chet, if a Kohen has a father who left the religion, so that Kohen is not allowed to be Mitameh for the father, does not get ritually impure for the father, and therefore you can be part of the funeral, but you have to make sure, if you're a Kohen, you have to make sure not to get Tameh along the way. And he says, in tearing one's clothing is the exact same as mourning, and whoever's chayav in one, whoever has to do one, has to do the other, which would imply that he wouldn't tear his clothing, because we said we don't have mourning for such people. And then he points out the way the Shulchan Aruch says it is, and this is something to think about. If somebody's there when somebody passes away, and this is not just a relative issue, anybody who's present at the passing of a Jew, so he says Chayav Likra has to tear Kriya. And then we tear Kriya because it's the passing of a person who can keep mitzvos, who's a sort of a living Sefer Torah, and so we tear our clothing in distress. And the Shulchan Aruch adds, even if this person sometimes did sins, Litei Avon, because he was just too tempted, or sometimes didn't keep mitzvos that he should have kept because they were too much of a burden for him. Right? And the Ramah adds, but if somebody regularly does Averot, and if somebody regularly abandons the Torah, then Ein Mitablim. And the Shach said, if somebody has a regular practice to do some Averot, even if it's Litei Avon, of any one Avera, of any one sin, we wouldn't tear Kriya, we wouldn't be with Abel. But many Achronim didn't agree with the Shach, but that's the Shach's stand. The Shach's stand is pretty strict, right? If I know of a guy who, whatever the thing is, you know, Lashon Hara, he just always tells Lashon Hara, he says, you shouldn't tell Lashon Hara, he says, I don't care, I'm telling Lashon Hara. The Shach seems to imply that we wouldn't mourn even for that person. But that's not the general practice. The general assumption among the poskim was that if somebody even regularly violates the Torah, but it's the Te'avon, it's because it's just too tempting, then we mourn such people. But in our terms, for our case, in this man whose father doesn't keep the Torah at all, say that's talking about as a Porish Midarchei Tzibur Mamash, somebody who just has really abandoned all connection to Jewish practice and to Jewish connection. So therefore, it seems clear to him, to Rechayim Dov Halevi, that you shouldn't tear Kriya either, just like you wouldn't have Avelut. Now, in this case, he says, he thinks that he's the only family member, the one writing to him, who would consider the possibility of Avelut, because nobody else is observant, so they're not going to do anything. So again, in our times, that probably wouldn't come up. You'd have a more complicated family dynamic, because the other relatives, even if not observant, would have some sense of wanting to sit Shiva, and then you'd have to navigate that. So we're going to get to it. But right now, the standard seems to be that there's no mourning. So if they're not going to mourn at all, then there's not a big question for him. You don't have to look. He doesn't need something to allow him to mourn. If he doesn't want to mourn, because it's clear, he says, that you're not obligated to mourn. And if you're the only one who would think about it, then... But then, there's another problem. So let's say his father dies, God, you know, sadly, his father passes away, and he doesn't mourn, he shows up at work the next day, or he shows up at Minyan the next morning, everybody knows that he's an observant guy. They say, why aren't you mourning like all other Jews mourn? So what's going to happen? He's going to have to say something like, well, my father was completely unobservant. My father was one somebody who abandoned the ways of the community. It's going to be embarrassing. So, and he doesn't want to tell a lot of people that. So the Rav Chaim Golovitz says, you can sit at home all 7 days of Shiva, but don't act like an avel. Right, that would be one solution. The solution would be you can stay away, you can disappear as it were, but don't act like an avel. That would be one solution. But then Rav Chaim Golovitz says, but maybe it's not true. Maybe that if this was, let's think, he says, let's think for a minute if this question came up in a different context. Let's suppose you had an observant family. Everybody in the family is observant, and sadly, one member of the family has left observance. Is a Polish midarkei tzibur, doesn't keep the Torah anymore and goes away. Right. So today, that unfortunately happens. It happens that you have, very sadly, but you have a kid goes to a college. You have it. Unfortunately, in Eretz Yisrael, you have kids go to the army or they came out of high school and they're not observant anymore. So let's suppose that member of the family sadly passes away, and all the other members of the family have stayed observant. So they want to mourn. Why do they want to mourn? For one thing, they want to mourn because it's psychologically healthy and it helps them and all that. But they also want to mourn because it would be embarrassing. Can you imagine a family has to say, our son or daughter, our brother, sister, whatever, father, mother, was so far gone out of the Jewish community, we don't mourn such people. So there would be a big pigam mishpacha, would be a big sad, it would be a big embarrassment to the family. So Rav Chaim Golovitz says he doesn't think there's anything usser about them mourning anyway. So he thinks, and if you look back on the Rush, there's a tshuva that he referred to before that I didn't bring up explicitly, but the Rush had said that ain't sarich lihitabel, you don't have to mourn. But if you want, but the prohibition against mourning, that we haven't heard. And the Rashba, who had mentioned before, as we saw already, that at the funeral, you'd have a funeral and you'd have people stand in two rows, that sounds like you have some kind of comfort. So perhaps the Rashba held that you were allowed to have mourning for these people as well. And another sad parallel to the situation is, let's suppose somebody kills themselves. So halachically, somebody who killed themselves, you weren't supposed to be involved with them either. That's the same phrase, in mitaskimahem. And the Torah wrote, however, that the relatives do tear kriya, and the Beis Yosef, it said the Ramban in Torah Adam says that they're obligated to tear kriya. And the Ramban goes on to say that it was only those who were put to death by a court who we say you don't have any avelut for. So it seems like that there are people who were allowed to mourn whether or not we have to mourn them. So he, Chaim Golovitz, suggests the Porish Mendachet Tzim, where somebody who has abandoned observance in all ways, could be maybe more like a suicide according to the Ramban's idea. And he didn't, because the Ramban hadn't made any difference, any distinction between those two. Chatam Sofer had a long tshuva about, sadly, somebody who killed themselves, and he also agreed, he felt that you could allow mourning such people because of Begam Mishpacha, because of the embarrassment to the family. So Chaim Golovitz says he thinks it's about the same thing for Porish Mizrachi Tzibor as well. I have no issue and interest in questioning that decision, but I think it's important to remember then, though, the different kinds of avilut that we have then. In that case, the sitting shiva and the mourning part of it are all about making sure the family doesn't get embarrassed, but it still remains true in his model that there are people who pass away who we fundamentally don't see ourselves as needing to mourn. And as their passing is not something that creates this great tragedy. We have to bury them because they're Jews and we bury Jews. The Rashba says you stand in two shirot, but maybe that's as far as you go. I mean, that might be a function of the experience of the burial. But beyond that, it doesn't seem to be an obligation to mourn such people. So that's a complicated topic, but I think there are many gradations and many nuances and many shadings of all this, but I think it's worth thinking about. Then, question is, what about Kaddish? So, Chaim Golovitz says, even a mumer you say Kaddish for, even somebody who's completely abandoned everything, you say Kaddish for it, but the Ramah had said, and then went further, or seemed to go further, he said, a mumer who was killed by non-Jews, we say Kaddish for. And that sounds like if the mumar had just had a natural death, then we wouldn't. Why would that be? Because the person who was killed, we say that the experience of being killed by non-Jews for being Jewish might be a kapara, would itself be a form of atonement, and therefore we would say kaddish for this person. And the Taz had thought he showed a gemara for it, and the Vilna Gaon agreed with all this, but so that's what some people seem to say. But I'm sorry, the Vilna Gaon seemed to think that if we don't say Kaddish for somebody, it means we don't mourn them at all, or that whenever we don't mourn somebody, we wouldn't say Kaddish for them. But most poskim hold that you say Kaddish even for a mumar, even if he passed away of natural causes, on his, you know, at home with all the good things, it doesn't matter. So no atonement that we know of. Nonetheless, we would say Kaddish for such a person. The Maharsha, however, pointed out that there's a tshuva of the Maharadach who says that b'neharag, you have a kaddish, even if there are other avelim there. So to understand this little piece of discussion, we have to remember that the original custom of kaddish was that only one person said it at a time. So if only one person said it at a time, you have to then come to decide who gets to say it and who doesn't get to say it. It's sort of like who gets to lead the davening, right? Who has the right to go up to the amud? So people who have yard site, let's say for a sister, sometimes want to lead the davening, and I'm not saying they shouldn't, but if there is somebody there who was a more technical mourner, we have that issue. So here too, that becomes an issue here. The Maharsha had pointed out, the Radak said that what we mean by a mumar is that the mumar can get the kaddish even if there are other people there who would want the kaddish. If the mumar's relative, the mumar had been killed by non-Jews, so that's why he can get a kaddish. So, meaning that a son really should be saying kaddish for his father, even if the father is a mumar, because we think the son's saying kaddish will provide some atonement for or help for in the world to come, some zchut, some merit for the father. And that's part of a son's role in a father's life, is to provide merits for the father. But then after that, the Maharsha writes, the Maharadach writes, but that you can't use that to say you're going to go before other avelim. So if all the avelim, so Chaim Dovid says, so in any place where the avelim all say kaddish together, so the son of a mumar could certainly say kaddish with them because there's no problem because he's not taking away from anybody else's right. So if there are two questions, are we allowed to say kaddish for a mumar? The answer, his answer is absolutely, you're allowed to say kaddish for a mumar. There's a reason not. So even though the Vilna Gaon thought you only say kaddish for those who you would be mit'abel for, so Rav Chaim Velevi says the majority of poskim do not agree with that Vilna Gaon, and we would say kaddish for a mumar. And then the second question is, can your interest in saying kaddish for somebody who doesn't really deserve it overcome the interest of other people? So that, to me, is a question that doesn't seem to have come up so much, because in our time, many people say kaddish together. But if there are people in shul who are going to leave the davening, and that involves a lot of kaddish, it involves saying baruch for the community, it involves leading the community in kedusha. So there's lots of things there that are relevant to the process of an avel trying to help the soul of the person who's passed away. So it seems to me that those would still be questions, even in the rubric of Chaim David Alevi. Then he points out the Chasam Sofer, and when he was talking about a suicide, sadly, he Kosofer wrote that when it's customary not to say kaddish for some people, he says, I don't know why that should be. What, because this person did something terribly wrong, or even lived a life that was terribly wrong, we're not going to do our best to save their souls to the extent that we can? He says, when Avshalom died, Avshalom had rebelled against his father and was clearly going to go to, you know, have a bad afterlife, whatever it would be. The tradition is that David said, Mizmorim of Tehillim, that created chapters of Tehillim, of Psalms, to try to help Avshalom be brought up from the depths of wherever he was being sent. And the tradition is that Rabbi Meir, who was an important rabbi at the time of the Mishnah, he had a very close relationship, a Talmud Rebbe relationship, a student-teacher relationship with Elisha Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, who had abandoned the religion. So, Rabbi Meir worked with him and cared about him, and after he died, Rabbi Meir said, let smoke rise from his grave to help him get a kapara. So the idea that we try to help people, even after they've passed away, get some kind of atonement for what they've done wrong, that seems clear to the Chasam Sofer. He says the only problem is that if there are other avelim, there are other mourners in the shul, they're not going to allow it. So the Chasam Sofer says, so it seems to him clear, if this son of the mumar, or the son of the suicide, or the relative of the suicide, wants to spend 12 months having a minion in his house, and creating a new minion, so where there are no other mourners there, he thinks it's perfectly fine. And he throws in, though, that it's all 12 months you say kaddish. We ordinarily say kaddish for 11 months because by doing so, we are making clear that we don't think of the deceased as being a terrible, terrible Rasha, because tradition was that the judgment of the worst people is 12 months in Gehenna. So we only stay at 11 months because of that. So Chasam Sofer had said, so people who are clearly Rishaim in a way that's terrible. So a suicide is one such way. The mumar that we're talking about, the people who are completely unobservant, is another way. So then it's clear we stay here for 12 months. That's a question that comes up often today, although I don't know how people handle it. But the question of how we decide how long to say Kaddish for somebody. So for ordinary Jews who are doing their best, as far as we know, we'd say for 11 months. But what if somebody's saying Kaddish for somebody who is never lived a good Jewish life? So there seems to be room to say we would say it for all 12 months. And then skipping a little bit the tshuva, because we're running out of time, but the last little piece of the tshuva, it took me a minute to point it out, is that he then says, and so I'm not, so he said, but you also have a little bit of time left with your father. So in the time that's left, I would suggest you do your best to see if you can find a way to bring your father to realize and do some kind of tshuva. Now, deathbed tshuva is not nearly as good as tshuva during one's lifetime. One can rectify one's actions and one can act better. That's clearly true. But it's still tshuva. So he says, see if there's a gentle way to talk to your father, to express your love, to express your hopes, and to express that there's always time left to do tshuva until one passes away, and the father can do better. And he says, and I'm not writing this because I want to find a way that you'd be obligated to keep the laws of Avelut. Because this whole discussion about what you would or what you wouldn't, and he's not getting into that. His whole point, though, is he says to give a merit to your father's soul, that it's so much better if he would pass away from having repented and done tshuva, and he prays for him that Hashem should give him success and do all these things, etc., etc., and that bring him back, because Hashem always is waiting for people to come back, because you don't realize how powerful the power of tshuva is. And shalom, shalom, l'rachok v'l'karov, amar Hashem refativ. Hashem is waiting for people to come back, and will find ways to heal even the most serious sinners. So with those thoughts on the Avilut, or the mourning for those who passed away, on the necessity of burial of people who passed away, and what do by Kaddish for people who passed away whose lives were not lives that would ordinarily keep them as members of the community in good standing. That is some of what Reb Chaim W. Levy dealt with for our response in Maday for the second of Cheshvan. Have a great day.